Here on the screen, we have a picture of King Wanchuck. This is about the time he took the throne as a 16-year-old in 1972. And he was interviewed shortly thereafter by the Financial Times. And in that interview, he said, quote, "Gross national happiness is more important than gross national product." When he said that, it's not very clear how seriously he had thought that through. And this idea, this concept of gross national happiness was just sort of out there for decades. But then in 1998, on our next slide, the government of Bhutan decided to take that idea and make it real. And the government created the Center for Bhutan Studies and Gross National Happiness. And so the government created it and said, okay, take this idea, gross national happiness, and figure out how we can translate that into something tangible to guide public policy. And the center decided to focus on good governance, sustainable development, the preservation and promotion of culture, and the environment. And those four things were later expanded to nine, which is on the next slide. And they then took it a step further, and their 2008 constitution mandates that lawmakers must take these variables into account whenever they're considering new legislation. And they didn't stop there. They took this idea, gross national happiness, all the way to the UN. And a decade ago, in July of 2011, the United Nations passed a resolution that, quote, "invites member states to pursue the elaboration of additional measures that better capture the importance of the pursuit of happiness and well-being in development with a view of guiding their public policies." So the UN issued that statement, and then the United Nations Development Agency, just like Bhutan, has begun to work with this concept. And one of the things that they do is they publish a happiness index every year. So if we can head to the next slide, Pat, here is a, the one before. Here is a top 20 for 2018-2020. Now, critics have pointed out this happiness index doesn't do a good job measuring individual happiness or in measuring our daily experiences. In other words, our happiness is probably going to have some flux in it. That's, you know, that's a fair critique. On the other hand, if we look at the list, it also very much coincides with common sense. Scandinavian nations are always at the top, and the bottom is always places like Afghanistan, Syria, Zimbabwe. So in other words, how it sorts itself out seems like it works. It aligns with our common sense of the places we expect people to be happy and unhappy. Where does the U.S. fit? Well, time after time, we're always in the high teens, usually 18 or 19. Seems to me to beg a question, why don't we rank higher? On the next slide, we'll see the U.S. is number one in economic strength. We have nearly one third of the planet's wealth. We're also number one in military spending. Our budget is three times greater than the number two country, China. Here's some other things we're number one in. Incarceration rates per capita. Deaths per capita from drug use. Billionaires per capita. We're the planet's second biggest polluter after China. Here's some things we're not number one in. Infant mortality, we're 47th. Literacy, 54th. Homicide rate per capita, 14th. Maternal mortality, 57th. So how can we be the richest country on the planet by far, and yet our maternal mortality rate is three times greater than a place like Montenegro? And Montenegro is newly independent and struggling with ethnic tensions and stable government. but yet they still have a far better maternal mortality rate than we do. The U.S. is unquestionably mighty and powerful and wealthy. There's no doubts about that. But for all of that wealth and power and economic and military might, it doesn't translate to the well-being and happiness of the population as a whole. So this paradox is why our nation ranks as it does in these happiness ratings. Being in the teens, well, that's still pretty darn good. But if we're number one in wealth, why aren't we closer to number one in happiness? So that's what I want us to ponder now. And let's see what kind of wisdom we can gain from the country of Bhutan and their idea of gross national happiness. Well, one thing I think we can learn from Bhutan is that more wealth does not equal more happiness. It's true at the personal level. It's true at the national level. A lack of wealth, yes, that certainly causes hardship and unhappiness. But it appears that once our needs are met and we have adequate wealth, multiplying that wealth does not elevate happiness to individuals or to countries. You can head to the next slide, Pat. The U.S. has been getting steadily richer for decades, but our happiness rating has remained unchanged. In a December 2020 paper published by the London School of Economics, authors David Hope and Julian Limburg, they studied and demonstrated that tax cuts to the rich, which are also known as trickle-down economics, that tax cuts to the rich widened inequalities and had no impact on economic growth and unemployment. And that's what this chart here is showing, that over time, the U.S., the top 1% has been getting steadily richer, while the bottom 90% gets steadily poorer. So these economists have verified what many of us already intuitively know, and we've observed around us since the Reagan administration, that the rich getting richer is only good for the rich. The expression that a rising tide will lift all the boats, well, that's true when it comes to water, but it's not true when it comes to economics, as you'll see in that cartoon there. Here we are starving to death in the boat, waiting for our tide to rise and lift our boat. Well, we're part of the 99%. So that more wealth does not equal more happiness, that's something we probably all know. Perhaps it's something we've observed in our own lives or those around us. But I still think it bears worth repeating, because all day, every day, we're bombarded by capitalist messages about having more things, bigger things, and that somehow they lead to happiness. I mean, it's part of our national mythology that idolizes capitalist values and the accumulation of wealth. So Bhutan is offering us a different version, a different narrative. Here's a second thing we can learn from Bhutan, which is that happiness is about so much more than economics. So gross national happiness is grounded on the idea that happiness is complex, it's multidimensional, and while it's connected to wealth, it's also not synonymous with wealth. So on this next slide, it's the same image from before. Check out some of the things gross national happiness is concerned with. Environmental sustainability, ability to use your native language, how you use your time, health, housing, literacy, art. Of course, economics and wealth matters. In last year's Sermon of the Mount, as I like to playfully call it, some of you might recall us talking about that adage, money can't buy happiness. And at that time, I noted that money does buy us happiness, but just to a point, that point being your basic needs being met. Once we have enough wealth to survive, more wealth does not bring more happiness because our well-being is about so many more things. So all of us, regardless of our degree of economic security, we all care about so many more things that impact our well-being. When I was working on the sermon, I encountered an organization called Gross National Happiness USA. And I'd like to share a quote from their website on the next slide here. Here's the quote. Our behavior is affected by our attention. The measures we choose, what draws our attention, will drive the things we do and the decisions we make. Measuring what matters helps us make decisions that are truly aligned with our values. When we measure what matters, things change. So shifting from gross national product to gross national happiness carries the potential to shift priorities and values, the thing that is getting our attention. Let me give you an example of what that might look like in action, switching from gross national product to gross national happiness. Bhutan is the world's very first and so far only carbon negative nation. Bhutan is showing the rest of the world that solving our environmental crisis is perfectly possible. But it takes some imagination. It takes some shifting of priorities and values. And most of all, it takes the will to do so. Let's explore this some more, the question of values. And I think this is a third lesson that Bhutan can offer us. Bhutan puts at the center of their national priorities a Buddhist value that very much overlaps with our values. In Buddhism, the individual is interconnected to the whole. So Buddhism teaches that our actions, our suffering, our happiness are all interrelated with everyone else's. And some schools of Buddhism include animals in that too. And they advocate for veganism and total nonviolence to both animals and people. And the belief is when we increase the happiness of one, we increase the happiness of all. And ultimately, how can any of us enjoy contentment while we allow others to suffer? So Bhutan uses these Buddhist values to guide their economic and political decisions. And that's what gross national happiness is about. So it's not just a statistic or an economic measure. It's an entire ideology. They're trying to lift all of their boats nationwide by improving all of the things that impact human well-being. When we try to push our gross national product upward, we're trying to boost our economic numbers with the assumption that the greater the wealth, the better. But as I argued, just having more wealth doesn't mean people are better off. Now, gross national product it's not nonsense. We've all felt the booms and busts of the overall economy before, but gross national happiness is saying it's not enough. It's incomplete. Now, if some of you were already thinking, you've been saying some very familiar sounding things. And I would say that, yes, UU values very much align with gross national happiness. The Buddhist values and UU values, they're coming from very different theological places, obviously. But what they share in common is an orientation towards communal values and a concern for others, challenging the status quo, trying to temper the excesses of capitalism and promote concern for the environment. Well, let's review some of our principles on the next slide and see how they might fit in with gross national happiness. So our first one, which is on the center there in red, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. If you'll allow me to continue my lifting all boats metaphor, our first principle is concerning itself with every boat. Every person matters. Our second principle, which is in the orange there at about the 10 o'clock position, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. This very much echoes the Buddhist idea that we have to be mindful and compassionate of the suffering of others. And we have a moral obligation to maximize the happiness of others. Our sixth, which is in the green in the 4 o'clock position, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. That's very much about lifting all boats. But it's by outfitting every boat with what it needs, not by stuffing the pockets of a few people who might be controlling the water behind the dam. And this sixth principle, the goal of world community, it's going to require some very broad changes to the current world order if it's going to truly promote peace and liberty and justice. And our seventh principle, which is the circle around it all there, our seventh principle comes from a different place, theological place, but respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are part is comparable in the sense that it emphasizes our interconnectedness, our responsibility between the individual and the whole, between us and other humans, but also between us and the environment. Gross National Happiness USA said, our behavior is affected by our attention. One of the things I love about being UU is that we are constantly engaged in asking ourselves questions about what draws our attention. Why is it drawing our attention? How is it impacting our behaviors? What alternatives could there be? So UU principles and UU values offer an alternative way of thinking and being. So in my mind, what Bhutan is doing at a global level and encouraging the creation of new kinds of narratives and thinking about how we relate to one another in the world, I think we do that in our congregations and as a faith community. I've never heard the phrase gross national happiness used in a UU church before, well, before today anyway. But what we do is very similar in encouraging people to consider the linkage between how your values and behaviors are connected and between how old approaches and old ways of doing things might lead to some new ones and how we think about and order our world. Bhutan's a small country. It's less than 1 million people. But morally, it's a giant. We're a small congregation, which is part of a small faith community, but I also like to think that we're moral giants. We stand against the status quo and the narratives that support that status quo. We reflect on our behaviors, why we engage in those behaviors, and encourage the creation of new narratives and new behaviors and new values. I'm proud of Unitarian Universalism, and I'm proud of us. It takes courage, it takes vision to do those things, and it takes moral fortitude. It's difficult sometimes to swim against the current. If you could head to our last slide, Pat. So on this sermon on the amount 2022, please do what you can to be a financial backer of this congregation and its moral mission. Bhutan provides an alternative moral model to the world and its status quo. We are, I think we could say, a micronation of sorts with a moral message and an alternative vision in Hendricks County. So to Bhutan, to UUs, to us, to anyone who is swimming against the current to find new ways to a happier future for everyone, I say Tashi Dalek. And I'll translate that both literally and not. The usual translation of that is blessings and good luck. But I like it even more when it's translated very literally. Literally, it would mean, may all auspicious signs come to this environment. And so may it be.